All right, so this is the afterburn. So if you got a comment or question, if you're online, write it down and type it in, and Rob and Kurt are going to monitor that. If you're here, you can raise your hand and I'll call you up to the microphone. Who would like to go first? Okay, Deirdre.
So I have two things, but they might be a little bit long, so I'll try to keep it as short as possible. In Matthew 19, you're talking about the man that went away sad after Yeshua told him, you know, what to do. He didn't like the idea of having to give up, you know, everything, but we have no idea whether or not he stayed that way. We're not told anything more about him. So and the connection in my head came James 4:9, weep and mourn, you know, let your laughter be turned to sorrow, humble yourself and the master will lift you up. He could have done that later on. We have no idea.
Could have. We certainly would like to think he did.
Right.
Because a lot of us initially react poorly. We don't respond well to what he wants us to do. And it takes time for us to realize the foolishness of that. And then, we'd like to believe that happened.
Right. How do we react to things, you know, just that connection again.
Exactly the same thing. We have to recognize that we don't always react well.
But if we love Yahweh, eventually our hearts are going to turn in the direction of, okay, I'm going to do this. I don't like it, but I'm going to do this because I love Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a connection I made with the love thing. And then talking about the love languages, it kind of struck me how we all have different love languages, but if we're all supposed to be different, I don't know, if Yahweh all gave us different parts of himself, then he must have the collective. So what would each of those look like? And to me, I started making a list of what they would look like in my head. Acts of service would be keeping the commandments, you know, the easy things, you know, like Shabbat, you know, the feasts. Quality time would be prayer, reading scripture, you know, just alone time where you could actually kind of focus in on him. Gifts would be offerings, not only of, you know, whatever your heart is moved to give monetarily, but time for other people, you know, the blessings that he has given you. The physical touch, how do we touch his heart? You know, keeping the hard commandments, you know, denying yourself, you know, giving up something that you love, but automatically, but ultimately you give it up because you want to make him happy. And then the words of affirmation is thanking him for all that he does for us. So I don't know if that's sort of a bad leap or...
No, that's fine. I appreciate that.
Thank you. That's all I've got.
Okay, thank you. Great. Go ahead, Rabbi Tom.
All right, thank you. One thing that I noticed was you mentioned the three different types of love, the three Greek words for love, and eros, philia, and agape. What occurred to me is that a married couple cannot really have an eros love unless they have a philia love, a love and concern for other brethren, and they can't have that philia love. If they don't have that filial love, then how can they love Yahweh? How can they have the agape love? They're all interdependent. Would you?
Yeah, there's just different levels.
Yeah,
you know,
different levels. But we can't relate. If we can't relate to others with love and concern, then we can't relate to Yahweh.
Absolutely. Look, think of the three different types of love as going from the most fleshly to the most heavenly. Okay, the eros love is the most fleshly, although he did design us to have that appropriately in the context of the heavenly when it's between a man and a woman who are married. Okay, so then it's actually combines the things together, as Rabbi Tom just said. The brotherly would be kind of that transitional in between. It's an outgoing concern and it's love for each other and you're aware of each other's needs to a certain degree. And then there's the agape love, which is that unconditional love that where you can love your enemies, et cetera, that higher level. And so, you know, absolutely there's interaction between the three different types of loves with different people. You may have various levels of that. But just understand this, you know, some of you, you know, who had bad relationship experiences, and maybe you ended up, you know, getting married at a very young age and realizing what a bad idea that had been, and then got divorced or whatever it was, is because you were driven at the beginning by that eros. It's that more lusting, it's the highest level of emotion is at that end of the spectrum, the eros, and the most controlled, focused emotion at the agape. So it's still a lot of emotion, but the emotion is doing all the driving on the eros, and it's not driving at all in the agape. The emotions are there manifesting out of the wisdom and the discernment and the rational and logical behavior pattern that brings out emotion. So, you know, when you let the emotions drive, that's when you're not going to make as good of decisions. And so let that be a lesson, especially to all you teenagers, because you guys are, you know, with all the hormonal stuff of being a teenager, are mostly on that outside end of the spectrum, being driven by that emotional eros sort of drive, that fleshly sort of drive. And you're going to make very bad decisions until you get more calm as you get a little older and get that under control. Okay? We all did that. So don't, you know, teenagers shouldn't think that I'm just like, well, what do you know? Believe me, nothing's different. I'm not one of those old guys that says, oh, back in my day, it was so different. No, some of the things we did was worse, you guys, okay? But it's at least as bad. So, no, I know exactly what it was like. I can remember that far back, okay? Anybody else? Okay, Steve, go ahead.
All right, there's a couple things I had. When you were first talking, you talked about when people came out of church. And this thought popped in my head. It's when people come out of church and they feel that they lost the emotional excitement, it's because they realize the work that needs to be done on themselves. And most of us are not excited about the change we need to do.
So, no, we're not.
And then the other things that kind of intertwine is how you talked about in Matthew 22 that we should love our neighbor as ourselves. But a lot of us fail to deal with the fact that we don't even love ourselves. How can we love each other?
Amen.
And so there was this other little thing is, I was just kind of wondering, is it the lack in others that shows us the lack in ourselves? You know, the inability to deal with others that somebody...
It's almost always going to be true that the thing that irritates you the most that other people do is stuff that you probably do. Okay? So just always ask that question. If somebody's irritating you, doing something or not doing something, whatever it is, ask yourself, I wonder if I do that too. Okay? That's not always going to be the case, but it happens a lot. Okay? All right. One of those two over there, they both had their hands up. Let them fight it out who gets to go first. Okay, Sarah Beth.
Okay. Hopefully you can make sense of this. I've got pieces. 1 John 4, verse 18. I think I'm asking this question out of the perspective of if we fear Yahweh, we'll never fear anything again.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the bigger problems with the blue is fearing everything that could possibly go wrong. So there's no fear, that wrong kind of fear, in love. And you're connecting love being the commandments, correct?
Yeah, there's no, look, it's not just the commandments. There's no fear in that relationship. Okay, remember, this whole thing had to do with verse 16, where it talks about staying in Elohim. All right, so that's supposed to be a relationship that when you're staying in him, you're staying in a love relationship. So you're keeping the commandments, you're trusting him, all that stuff from Deuteronomy, you know, 10, 12. And so when you're in that love, there should be no fear. Okay, that kind, you know, the kind of fear that we tend to think of as that fleshly fear, not the awe and reverence fear.
Then what if we still have fear? Where's that perfect love that casts out fear? What are we missing?
You have trust. You have holes in your trust, either, you know, with him, with somebody on, you know, we all have trust issues. That's where we have to look for. Okay. You could have a trust issue if you're married with your spouse. You could have a trust issue with your leader in the congregation. You have a trust issue with the Creator himself, because there's things in your life that he allowed to happen that you don't think he should have let happen. And so you have trust issues like, why would he let that terrible thing happen to me? Okay, so it really comes down to a trust issue, which goes back to the teaching you wanted me to do. Funny how you snuck that in there. Okay, Shannon, go ahead.
All right, so this is actually more like a, more of a comment, I guess, kind of a question. It's actually something Steve Ory pointed out, because that is something I've always asked myself. You know, I read over and over, love your neighbor as yourself, and I ask myself, do I even love myself, though? Because I can really be critical, very critical to myself on everything I do, and it comes to a point where I really, really want to physically beat myself up, and there are some times that I do that, but not frequently, but anyway, okay. That's my question, like, how does a person get past that barrier of feeling like they're not really loving themselves, so they can get past that and be able to open up and love another person?
Okay, I appreciate that. Okay, so first of all, I would rather the verse read a little differently. I'm not going to change scripture for you or, you know, take it upon myself to think I should do that. But I think what it would be better if it said it in a more clear way is, love your neighbor as he loves you. Okay? Because a lot of us are not healthy enough to love ourselves. So if we're going to love our neighbors as we love ourselves and we already don't love ourselves, that's not going to go well. All right? So, but it's assuming that you become healthy, then you should love your neighbor as yourself. But you have to learn to love yourself first. So that's kind of like putting the oxygen mask on first, the plane before the, you know, your child, that kind of thing. So I would say that, you know, you have to understand that we have to look at how he loves us and then embrace that. So if he thinks that you're worthy of the love and he's patient and compassionate and merciful and all the things that he is, then you ought to be those things to yourself. And then you ought to be those things to your neighbor. Okay, so follow the flow of that in the right order. Okay, this goes back to like the lyrics even from today's song, you know, about Stand Still, which is, you know, he called you where you are knowing you could get there from here, which means that you are worthy of all the things that he's promised to you, even if you don't feel like you deserve any of them. So you have to kind of look at you through his eyes. Then look at others through his eyes. Everything, if you could do it through his eyes, then it all works. Does that make sense? Does that help? Okay. Okay, Rob, live stream.
Okay, from Ati says, if we are to love agape, shouldn't that mean that we are to also work on restoring and reconciling relationships with others / our enemies after forgiving them? Or is this a separate context of agape? And then she's following up as, what's a practical way to agape love others?
All right, so why don't we be patient with some of these questions till we get through the teaching? It may cover some of that, but I will say this much. Let's go back to the forgiveness teaching. There's another one you need to go back and listen to and understand that forgiveness does not require restoration. Okay, they're separate situations. You don't see Yahweh going and seeking restoration with anybody. He makes it available and lets them come and seek to restore with him. We act like enemies. He lets us know how dumb that was and lets us figure it out and go reconcile with him. Okay? So you don't have to seek restoration and reconciliation with enemies, especially if they're still acting like enemies. Now, you can be open possibly to it if the person does all the things necessary to restore your trust, to restore your shalom and peace in the relationship, whatever. So you can have those kind of things. And like this fly right now is going to drive me insane. It just won't go away. Steve on this side. Okay, who has a question, comment? All right.
I just have more of a praise because of your teaching was so strong. And I thank you so much for that. This is going to be a great lesson. And I'm so happy to be here.
Appreciate that.
You mentioned something in chapter 15 where you were talking about stay. Although that wasn't, I'm not sure that was part of, it was John 15. It wasn't really part of your lesson, but I want to ask your permission.
Okay, but it will be in a couple of more parts. It's in my. We will get there.
I know you will.
But go ahead.
It was probably because I wanted to bring up 15, 9, and 10.
Okay.
Which I'm sure you will. But today was so important because I've been dwelling on these two verses last week in my own personal reading. Verse 9, as the Father has loved me, I have also loved you. Stay in my love. And that hit me so strong when I was reading it on my own. And it hit me again today. And at the time I said, well, how do I stay? In the very next verse, number 10, if you guard my commands, you shall stay in my love. And I just...
Yep.
I said, thank you. I thank you. It's engraved in my heart, so appreciate it.
Amen. I appreciate that. And yes, that is absolutely in my notes to get to that section. But I had to, you know, lay the foundation of what it means when it says things like, you know, as the Father has loved me, well, how did he love you? And I have also loved you. Well, what did that look like? So we have to lay all that out so that we understand what Yeshua is talking about here. But yes, we're going to cover pretty much most of the chapter, you know, I think in my notes for John 15. And actually, it's funny because I usually put a small fraction of one of the verses in the section that I cover. And the part that I put was, stay in my love, love one another as I have loved you. So I was quoting right out of the verses that, you know, that's the only quote I put from John 15. And we're going to read about 21 of those verses in the notes there. So I'm glad that that's starting to hit you guys. Because, again, the ministry that he's given for me to do is to help us understand the communication, the language. What is he trying to tell us so that we can embrace it and do it and respond appropriately? And we've been basically given a very convoluted understanding, you know, over our lifetime. And so it makes it really hard when we read verses like this to know, okay, he wants me to stay in his love. What does that mean? I want to do it, but what does it mean? What does it look like? How do I do that? And of course, not too many people out there are answering that question. You know, so that's why we do the teachings we do, to try to answer those questions. You know, part of the reason also I did this teaching, like I said at the beginning, was because when I first started teaching, it was the first teaching I did, I was dealing with a lot of Mesa Christians, we'll call them. They were like Messianic, but they were very Christian-minded. And I had to try to address this whole love thing that they were going through, which made them really struggle with obey thing. They didn't understand they were connected, you know, because they thought the love thing covers all. And we'll read that eventually here. That was probably the next thing we're going to get to, 1 Corinthians 13. But this idea of how love covers, but they have to understand what love is it's covering. Okay, and they almost don't love into like another version of grace. It just sort of erases and wipes out and just allows for whatever. And but they don't understand the terms are not being used correctly. Okay, go back to live stream.
Okay, from Anna Zimmerman said, could Deuteronomy 10:12 be used and approached when walking into a potential marriage with someone?
I feel very comfortable using Deuteronomy 10:12. In everything. I find excuses to use it everywhere. Look, I would say Deuteronomy 10:12 would be a really good piece of your measuring sticks that if you're going to marry somebody, you're going to want to know that they're walking out that process of Deuteronomy 10:12. That they're fearing him, walking in his ways, loving him, serving him, and guarding his commands. Okay? So, absolutely. And of course, they should be counseling with me. Hint, hint, Anna. Okay. Actually, that's his choice, and so it's really not her choice, and I understand. I know her, just so you know. One part of a really great family that's friends with us over in Alberta.
Okay, from a couple of people asking on this. Chris and Becky Andrews and Ariel. So, Rabbi, would you please elaborate on Matthew 19:29? And then the other one is Matthew 19:29. Does this mean physically leaving their family or spiritually, such as if they're of a different or have no belief?
Okay, so 19:29 said, everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or fathers or mother or wife or children or lands for my name's sake. Okay, so in other words, he's saying that you may have to leave some of these things behind because they're not appropriate to bring along with you in the condition they're currently in. Okay, so you may have to leave a house because it's in a place that you just are not going to be able to grow and get things done, and you may need to move somewhere. Or you may not have relationships. You know, you may be in relationships that are just not healthy for your walk, and you may have to leave those behind. Okay, so it's talking about in a very much a physical way because of the spiritual conflict. In other words, the spirit of man and the spirit of Hasatan are causing a lot of trouble in those relationships with you and the spirit of the of Elohim and that small voice you're trying to listen to, because these people are becoming very loud spokespeople for the other two. And you know what I'm talking about. When you made this choice and you started telling your friends and family about it, and all of a sudden the adversarial voice started telling you, oh, well, you're not saved anymore, and you're going to hell, and you're going to, what are you, a Jew now, and all that other blah, 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 blah. Okay? All that freak out. So some of those relationships need to be told, if you're going to act like that, we're not going to have the relationship that you want. Okay, this isn't telling you to leave people and to shun people and all that stuff. This is telling you that you are making a choice for his name's sake, for the sake of his authority, to separate yourself from people that are adversarial to that walk. And you may need to do that. There are people that are just going to give you nothing but harassment and grief if you allow them to stay in that level of relationship with you. And the only answer, unfortunately, is to put that aside and say, you cannot have this relationship with me like this right now. Okay, there needs to be respect. And if they can't respect your walk, then they need to be given boundaries. You need to set up boundaries between you and them. Look, Yeshua says this walk is going to cost you. It may cost you a relationship with people who were very close to you, at least you thought they were, and so you made this choice. Then you find out who really cares about you. And really, you know, respects you walking out your own salvation, and who, you know, is threatened by it and uncomfortable with it and kind of lashes out. You have to deal with all that. All right? So hopefully that answers the question. So nowhere in Scripture does it tell you to just cut everybody off and start just because they don't believe what you believe. It's trying to tell you those that don't believe what you believe, if they're trying to impose or harass you in your walk, you may need to create boundaries. I highly recommend that, by the way. Because otherwise, what could happen? Anybody, if you had a child, or if you remember being one or watching somebody with a child, and seeing that two-year-old go up to the mom and nag and nag and nag and nag and nag and no, 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 until finally it does turn into yes. We've all seen that happen. The no becomes a yes. If you allow people to irritate you long enough, you may decide to just give in because it'll stop the thing from irritating you. You still don't want to give the child the thing, but they're irritating you to the point where they're going to win. And they know that because you taught them that. Because you let them win when they did that. See, my children won't do that to me because they know it's not going to work. I taught them that from the beginning. If they try the second time, I just give them a look and they're like, oh, sorry, never mind. We're not doing that, right? Okay, so you have to set those boundaries. Now, if you have people that do not respect your boundaries, you have to then cut them off. And let them know, the only reason I'm cutting off is because you do not respect that this is my life. I respect yours. You're not where I am. I'm not judging yours. Don't judge mine. Let me walk out my... Just memorize Philippians 2:12 and just keep sending them there. It's not their job to walk out your salvation. It's only their job to walk out their own. Okay? And leave you the space to do the same. But remember, Christianity has totally brainwashed them the idea that we are responsible for other people. If we don't do whatever, they're all going to die and burn in hell because we didn't do it. That's what they teach you. And so they feel responsible for you. And just go ahead and release them from all that. It's okay, mom, dad, whoever. You're not responsible for me. I'm responsible for myself. Paul says it very clearly. I got to walk out my own salvation in fear and trembling. Great verse. All right, go ahead. Next question or comment.
Okay, from Anna Zimmerman. How does one determine whether they have eros, philia, or agape love towards something?
Okay, so I will get into that a lot more as we kind of lay out more what the agape is, and we'll see the filio play out. So let's just kind of wait and let this play out a little bit more. And if at the end of it you want to ask me, you know, privately, we can kind of cover that more. Just remember, again, the Eros love is the more intimate, often sexual and physical. It's that desire for the other person, okay, that is emotionally driven. It's appropriate. And it was meant to be there. I mean, part of his saying, be fruitful and multiply, is he expected you to desire each other so that you'd want to multiply. That's why we are so sexually driven, because that's what he wanted us to do, is to produce like after like kind. But he wanted us to do it in a very specific structure. Okay? So that we wouldn't just be popping out babies and letting them just run off and do whatever they're doing and not have any place that structurally will raise them up, and so we can build a safe environment for people to flourish and grow and do all these other things. Functioning always needs structure. And so while the Eros is important, that's the desire, okay? That lusting or craving that's appropriate in a right way, in a right time, not appropriate at other times, okay? The philia is that friendship. It's friendship, okay? It's a friendship love. Now, friendship can go further, but it's a friendship love. You don't have the philia love for everybody. Not everybody is your friend. It's a relationship. Just like the Eros love belongs in a marriage, the philia love belongs in a friendship, okay? And then, of course, the agape love is a love that you need to be able to have with everybody. There are aspects of it that's how you treat everybody, with aspects of the agape love. If I have to love my enemy and that's an agape love, then I'm covering everybody. Because between the people I like and care about the most to the person who hates me as my enemy, agape applies to every level in between. Okay? But it deals with that, just specific areas of that love. Because with agape, I don't have to like anything you're doing. I don't have to agree with anything you're doing. But because of our relationship, I still love you. If you're my child, I will always have that agape love. I might not always like and approve and all the other stuff, but I will always have that love. Okay? So hopefully, Anna, that answers the question after I told you I wasn't going to answer it, which I do often.
Okay, from Jim Januska, or from Teresa, says, in Deuteronomy 10:12, how do we serve Elohim? What exactly does that look like?
Part three, well done and good and trustworthy servant.
Okay, from Olivia and Janet Hoffman, says, Rabbi, in John 14:15, how are bearing the fruits of the Spirit included in guarding the commands? I know as a Christian, they used to teach us a lot about the fruits, but not about the law.
Well, I mean, look, the keeping of the law, the guarding of it, the embracing it as part of your covenanting and your transformative behavior changes, it needs to bring out of you, ultimately, because of the relationship with your Creator and understanding what the law is supposed to do for all of your relationships, bring out of you things like love and joy and peace and patience and all these other things. Because of the level of trust and the level of relationship you have with Him, and you see how that all works out, that's a fruit that should come from that. Because you see the patience He had for us with the things that He put in place. You see the love that He has for us and the joy that's there and all these other things, and we bring those things through. But just realize that what He's pointing out in the fruit of the Spirit is that when you have His intrinsic nature, go back to the teaching on understanding the Ruach, okay? When you have His intrinsic nature, then these things that you could have in the flesh, you could have love, joy, peace, pain, you could have all that stuff in the flesh. When everything's great and everything's wonderful, you can, I've got peace. I've got patience if you're not in my way getting, slowing things down or whatever. I've got plenty of patience. Do you understand what I'm saying? But can you have those things when things are less than ideal, let's put it that way. When things are not ideal or really in adversarial to your state of love, joy, peace, patience, you know, all that stuff. It's really hard to be those things under those conditions. That's when you need to embrace His nature to find a way to be those things in a place that it would be really generally against your nature to be. James talks about that with joy in the trials, right? How do you have joy in a trial? That doesn't generally make sense in your normal nature, the fleshly nature. Only in his nature can you understand the purpose of the trial and embrace it to a point where then you can understand how you can have joy in it. But until you get to his nature and understand what everything's going on through his eyes, and it's hard to have those nine aspects of the fruit of the fruit of the Spirit there. Okay? Next question or comment.
Okay, from Kathleen Phillips. Says, how do we pray to have agape love for our enemies? Is it like the initial forgiveness that we strive for when someone has committed a sin against us?
I'm trying to think of how I want to answer this, because on the one hand, I do want you to pray. On the other hand, I want you to stop the Christianized thought process of thinking that everything that you need, you simply have to pray for it. No, you have to just do it. Okay? What you need to pray is when you struggle to do, and ask for guidance and figuring out why you're struggling to do. So you have to have love for your enemy. If you don't understand what that looks like, wait till we get there. I promise you that loving enemies is a verse we're going to cover. Okay, it will be in this teaching. But just realize that the idea of, I want to know what to pray for in this particular case. Well, first of all, you're not going to pray for it till you understand what it's all about, which I haven't taught you yet. So you're not going to pray anyway about it until you get there. But once you understand something, I mean, you should only be praying for stuff you understand, or praying for understanding about stuff you don't understand. Okay? But let's wait till you get to understand it. But then also realize that most of the things a lot of us have been taught to pray for is stuff that doesn't need prayer. It needs action. Talk less, do more. Do more praying quietly. Stop talking so much. Because the stuff that you feel like you need to talk about is mostly stuff you need to be doing or not doing, taking action. When you pray, just be quiet. Let him talk to you. Let whatever happens, happens in that. I mean, go to him when you have something that you really are just stuck, you're lost. Although you can go to me or someone else and go get counsel about those things too. But a lot of times as a Christian, you were told to pray for all those things that you'd rather not do. You'd just rather have him just do it. Talk less, do more. All right? I'm going to have to make a t-shirt out of that. All right? Talk less, do more. Next.
From Pete and Brenda Lamb.
I'll write that one down.
Says the first sentence in 1 John 4:12 seems to be out of context. Is the possible context for this, no one has seen the Father, be found in 1 John 3:6?
Who asked this question?
Pete and Brenda Lamb.
Pete, you didn't watch the Father and the Son teach? Okay, so I mean, I don't know why he just threw that in there in the middle of what was going on in 1 John 4, okay? Because it seems to be a little bit out of context. What was the verse in chapter 3 that he went to?
It said 1 John 4:12 and then 1 John 3:6.
3:6, everyone staying in him does not sin. Everyone sinning neither has neither seen him nor known him. I'm guessing that there would probably be a link there. I was just teasing Pete anyway, because it was just fun. That's why I asked who it was. It was somebody I know, so I could feel free to tease a little bit. Of course, no one has seen Elohim at any time kind of gets back to the whole Father and the Son teaching where Yeshua says, I came to show you the Father. So, but look, the whole flow of this has to do with the Father behaves a certain way, the Son imitates that, then we imitate him, and then we imitate those that are imitating him. And there'll be some verses that we're going to read that really get clear into that. Where Paul and others of the leaders here, I think it might be John and Peter also, get into some of those, do what we do. Listen to what we're saying. Follow us. We're not usurping him, but we're setting examples for you. Okay? In other words, the role of the teacher and the discipler gets mentioned in some of these verses, and we'll see that. So yeah, Pete, we'll get to that. But I thought it was odd that verse 12 kind of had that little piece in there. It doesn't seem to be necessary to the flow where they are at this point in chapter 4, where John is trying to say so. Don't have a real good answer for you there. But I did want to say that for anybody, because you brought it up, that anybody doesn't understand that no one has seen Elohim at any time, that's part of the Do You Know the Father and the Son teaching, okay?
Okay, from a couple here on this one. J. Anthony, Matthew 19:18, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. How can I love my neighbor if they are from a different faith? Also, what's the best definition of a neighbor? And Jonathan, is loving one's neighbor in the new, I think, probably the New Testament, referring to loving one another, that is, / the brethren?
Okay. You guys haven't heard the first version of this teaching, obviously. We are going to cover and define the neighbor thing. Okay? So not picking on you at all. Just be patient. We will absolutely have a whole section on who's your neighbor. Okay? So we'll have that all covered in one of the teaching parts here. Just, that was in the original teaching, too, so it's in there. But so you can go back. If you want to know sooner than later, go find the Love and Torah teaching and listen to it. It's two or three parts. It exists already. And you can go in it. There is a section on who's your neighbor. But I'm just redoing it now because it wasn't on video. I think it might be on YouTube, but it's just audio only, but on YouTube. But okay? But those are good questions, and I promise you they are going to be addressed in this teaching. Okay? Because remember, right now we're still breaking down the first command. Okay? Loving him and knowing what love is and defining the terms. Then we're going to deal with the second command, which is loving each other after we understand it in the first great command. And so we're going to get into the story of like the Good Samaritan and some of those other things where we're going to see the whole issue of the, and of course, Yeshua even asked them which one was neighbor to the other, you know. So we're going to get into that, I promise you.
Okay, from Philip Mason, 1 John 4:20, would I be right in expounding on this by saying that if we can't obey physical leadership, who we can see, how can we hope to obey Yahweh whom we can't see?
That would be a correct analysis or a correct conclusion to go to. He's giving you, you know, an analogy here that would apply to all of those different things. And don't find it unusual that when you ask questions, I kind of look to my left for some reason. Those who know will get it. Okay. I just like watching her face turn red.
From Olivia and Jenna Hoffman, says, Rabbi, a follow-up on chapter 14, verse 15, would you say the teachings of Yeshua in Matthew 5 helps us understand the law better? Would you recommend studying the Gospels along with the first five books?
Well, I mean, look, there are those that have made an attempt to give you a Birkat HaShah verse to go with the Torah portions or section of verses. It's not always easy to find a direct connection between a Birkat HaShah section with the weekly Torah portion. But yes, you should be studying the Gospels, but you should. I would recommend anybody that's new with this to just put that down for a little bit and get a good grasp of the first five books from Genesis to Deuteronomy so that you don't constantly still hear the voice of your pastors in your head reading the Gospels while you're trying to understand the Tanakh, okay? But when you have a good working understanding of the first five books, then sure, you need to understand now. Then you go back and you'll understand what Yeshua was trying to say or Paul's trying to say in his letters or Peter, John, or James, or whatever. You'll understand them a whole lot better if you already have an understanding. I mean, for the first time, some of you were probably shocked to find out to love your neighbors yourself is in Leviticus. You probably thought that was a New Testament idea. And circumcision of flesh and circumcision versus circumcision of heart. Oh, circumcision of heart is in the New Testament. Well, it's in the Old Testament too. You didn't know that either. Because who spends time over there anyway? But there is a verse that says, and you shall circumcise the flesh, your heart. Okay, the foreskin of your heart. It talks about that in plenty of places. Okay? And so this is something that, matter of fact, I think we were really close to that verse today. Anyway, when I was putting the notes together, it was really close to a verse, and I ended up not going there. But maybe I'll go there when I go to that verse next time so you can see where it's connected. But the whole point is you have to realize that all of your time in the church was spent basically, I don't know, 60, 70% Paul's writings, another 30, 40% Gospels, and that was about it. Unless you had an eschatology person, then you spent a lot of time in Revelation, okay? But you really didn't spend a whole lot of time to the left of Matthew. And so you need to spend a whole lot of time dealing with and understanding the stuff that Yeshua was talking about. And he's talking about the stuff from Genesis through Deuteronomy primarily. You found the verse? So Deuteronomy 10, I knew it was going to be on the top of the page here. All right. So Deuteronomy 10:16, it says, "And you shall circumcise the foreskin." So it was when I was doing 10:12, I was almost there. I know I was almost there today. Okay. So 10:16, "And you shall circumcise the foreskin of your heart and harden your neck no more." Did you hear that, Chris? Okay. Sorry, he was out this week from praise practice with a stiff neck. Okay, so we probably should end it with that one. Okay, what else you got?
Okay, from Curtis, says, "Rabbi, it seems that the English word for love doesn't really do justice as the Greek does. Is there a similar understanding for guard when keeping commandments?"
Yes, it's a similar thing for almost all of the key terms that you need to understand where, you know, like shomer for guard is not the same as, or even just like when he says, you know, in Shema, just Shema, the hear, O Israel, it's not just hear, like in hear the words, but it's more active hear and do. Very few languages that I've ever, you know, interacted with translate very well one-to-one because the language itself has all kinds of nuances and flavors and things that are going on, you know, that don't translate straight word for word over unless you use multiple words for the one word. Because if you know that language, you know all of the little, all the sprinkles on top that make it much more robust a word than just changing it to the, to an English word, you know, that we have. So go ahead.
Okay, last question. From UC Steve says, "General question about the commandments. How do we share that commandments in the New Testament are also referring to the statutes and judgments in the Old Testament, as the word statutes I could not find in the New Testament?"
Okay, so just recognize that, again, we have one word in English that you see almost always in the New. We see the word law, okay? But if you're... Let's take it in English as an American, okay? If I tell you about the traffic laws or the driving laws or whatever laws there are about anything, there are laws that are called laws. There are other ones that are called statutes, other ones that are called ordinances, other ones that are called... I mean, we have all these different words for aspects of things that are in the law, okay? And so... that same thing works here in Hebrew, especially with the Old Testament, where there are things that are known as his judgments. There are things that are known as the judgments, the mishpat, the mishpatim, right? The judgments. We also have the chukim, which are laws that we don't understand, but we just trust him on it. Like why we need a red heifer, you know, to cleanse things a certain way. Okay, so those things that make you go, okay, I don't get it, but I believe him. All right, we have other things that are known as the Torah. We have other things that are the different words that we have for all these things, statutes, ordinances, etc. Okay, and so in changing language and translating it into different places, also over time, we tend to merge things together. Okay, like even if you learn Hebrew, you know, we talk about having our picnic and mikveh in July. Well, we're not having a mikveh. Mikveh is a place. It's not something you do. But over time, it's been turned into including the thing that you do, which is to immerse in a mikveh. Okay? So we talk about someone saying, I want to get mikveh'd. What, do you want me to turn you into a place that water stores it so people can go in and get... I mean, what do you... I want to get mikveh'd? What do you... Okay? But we now have, over time, that word now includes the act. Okay? If you're a Jew and you talk about Passover, you mean Passover and unleavened bread. You're not going to refer to unleavened bread. It's Passover. It's the whole week. Okay? Over time, these things get referred to and more inclusive. So when we say the word law, by the time you get to the New Testament, it's including ordinances and statutes and all these other things. You're not going to see all those things brought out separately so much. And so hopefully that answers that question.
Yeah, that was the last question. I got just one comment on here. She's just following up on the Chris and Becky Andrews says, thank you for the elaborating on the 1929. You brought me to tears. It felt like I was the only one in the room with you, getting counsel. Love, love, love you, Rabbi.
I appreciate that.
And that's all.
All right, fantastic. All right, so hopefully this was a blessing to everyone.